Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. And Rosenbaum Media Group, a digital communications agency integrating high-definition video into PR, marketing, advertising, and social media campaigns. Big-picture thinking for local and national clients. RosenbaumMedia.com. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So the Media Project this week is going to be a great opportunity for commentary, analysis, and if we're lucky, a little bit of insight into the media issues of the week. Media issues, I say, not meaty issues, but they may be that too. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. To my left as we sit here in the studio in Central Avenue in Albany is Paul Conte, a longtime television news director, professor of journalism at the College of St. Rose.
Professor of communications.
I beg your pardon.
That's
sir.
Okay.
Communications, that's true.
I don't want to steal Kalen's job.
Aha, this is good. Well, communications is, of course, a very broad field, so
yes.
You're broadly informed.
And
here.
It has an S at the end of it, because the SUNY department, which I taught in for many years, this being Alan Chartok.
I would have gotten to around 10
you
would
have.
But, you know,
it takes you time.
Since nobody who listens to the station knows who that is. Yes,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So there was a big fight in our department, which they decided that they weren't going to put the S on to communication. So it was either the Department of Communication as opposed to the Department of Communications. And the reason for that was that it connoted a sort of intellectualism as opposed to application that otherwise was there. Okay, but listen to this. This is what was great. So the chair wanted to put on the piece of paper the Department of Communication, the department without an S.
Oh, boy. Actually, I've heard this battle. The same thing goes out at Syracuse University, where it is the Newhouse School of Communications, to signify that it is a school that teaches journalism, broadcasting, film,
art, graphics,
and real-world application, as opposed to the somewhat rarefied theory of hermeneutics and other things of that kind.
I used to know Herman. No,
oh, you knew Herman.
Herman.
My father
Herman.
Was Herman, and he taught hermeneutics.
Anyway, this has nothing to do with the current issues of the media, but we might start out with it. Maybe it does have. Maybe it does have, because there's a new Gallup survey that shows that only 23% of Americans trust newspapers or TV news. In other words, the communication media that folks have relied upon for years aren't much trusted. Why not?
What do you make of that, Paul?
What do I mean? We've talked about this already. I don't know why it's news, because news is what's surprising, or what's.
I like it. News is what's surprising.
Yeah, and this isn't surprising, but we actually had this chat a couple of weeks ago by phone, you and I. I would like to drill down into these stats someday. Maybe I'll get money and I'll do that. But I would like to know if there are specific parts of the media that deserve more trust or mistrust from the American public. And it just sort of gets piled on.
Well, no, that's a very interesting point. I mean, Rex and I and you have discussed many times that the media is hardly the media. It's made up of component parts. And the New York Post, for example, is a disgrace. And the Daily News ain't much far behind it. And then, you know, you get the Fox Network and all the rest. But when confronted with, is the media doing a good job? You know, my mind automatically goes to the New York Times, which I think is an excellent news organization.
I think most people think of cable TV news when they think of the media. They think of what's going on that. And by that standard, they would probably say no, because they hear people shouting at each other and, you know, the 24-hour coverage that tends to be kind of, let's say, repetitive and maybe a bit explosive.
Or your newspaper, Rex, which is constantly named as the best in its circulation class.
Every morning at the
every
banner.
Every morning on the banner, it says so.
And just so, in case you forget or don't happen to notice.
Well, I would use it if I had a newspaper. And
no good.
Newspapers being what they are today.
Well, you know, the thing is that I think I heard that. It's not just newspapers that are low in trust. It is at least newspapers are rated higher than, let's say, Congress or HMOs
right.
or organized
banks.
Labor. Yeah, banks.
Banks actually just
banks
pulled ahead.
Slightly ahead of us, yeah,
yeah.
But it is interesting.
They went up 5 points.
As recently as 1979,
so
I guess that's not recent, is it? That 1979, more than half of Americans said that they had either somewhat or a great deal of confidence in newspapers. That was when newspapers peaked. TV News peaked in 1993. So you remember that. You were still in TV news in those days.
Paul. Yes, I still was.
I used to be envious of local anchors because their trust rating was rising as newspapers was falling. And the speculation was that it was because we saw their personality. We got to know them as real people. So the advice to newspaper editors was put more personality into your papers, you know, create more columnists,
sure,
have
sure.
more visible.
Were you able to do that, Rex?
Well, I have tried to create more columnists, more personality, but it doesn't seem to have helped.
I don't think it has. I have to tell you that the best thing that you ever did was to chair this program, as to moderate this program.
Really?
No, because I don't think...
Not getting married.
Not having a
from a professional
okay.
point
all
of
right,
view.
Right.
You know, Rex raised the whole subject. The fact of the matter is, who knows who your local newspaper editor is? But here, I have created this monster celebrity by inviting him to do this thing.
I was everybody nobody until I met Alan Chartok.
Well, not among the elite. Everybody
There's
knew
There's a
who
song in this.
Everybody knew who you were, you know, at all the cocktail parties and all the rest of that stuff. But once you got here, then the people knew who you were.
The people.
And that was better.
I think there is an interesting point, though, to this notion of personality in the media. And it goes to another issue that's being raised. And that is, let's say, what's sometimes called the post-fact era of journalism.
Say again?
Post-fact. That is, there's a lot of talk about the notion that because news has been commoditized, because people can just go onto the internet and find news all the time from any wide range of sources, that we who manage news organizations like a newspaper or TV station ought to be focusing on analysis and perspective, interpretive reporting rather than giving people news.
Mm-hmm.
And there is now beginning to be a bit of a pushback to that. But the initial notion has been out there for a few years that what is going to differentiate us and give us a niche in the marketplace is having something that isn't just news. It is interpretation.
Well, that's not a new idea, especially for newspapers. Historically, that's where they came from. The idea to divorce themselves from the analysis and the opinion and the viewpoint evolved because it was better in terms of recruiting money to not have a viewpoint, but the...
No, I'm not saying viewpoint. I'm saying that...
If you do analysis, aren't you going to end up having a viewpoint?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is to take away from... used to be that newspapers had, here's what happened yesterday. Here's the news. The headline is what happened yesterday.
Yeah.
And increasingly, the notion is that's old hat. That is something that people get instantly from their mobile devices and so on. So if you're going to have a print product especially, or if you're going to have an evening newscast at a certain set time, you have to give people analysis rather than here's what happened, because they already know what happened.
Yeah, well, look, you have to look at it this way. Paul, you teach at a wonderful institution, the College of St. Rose.
Thank you.
Your president just resigned.
Yes. I don't know anything about
it. No, that's... that, by the way, is the entire point. That's exactly right. Because nobody knows anything about it. It just happened. Now, it caused quite a buzz, I'm sure, on your campus, around the place, and around the city we're in Albany. And so people start to project. It's a psychological mechanism, a mechanism of projection. Project into the story the possibilities as to why this happened. Nobody knows. The more people are left out, the more they project their ideas as to what could happen. Somebody say, well, is this a scandal? Did something bad happen? Was it about money? Was it about this or that? I'm only using your institution because that's when Rex's point becomes really relevant. I hate to say it, but really relevant, because if the newspaper can't begin to do the right kind of investigative reporting to tell us what was going on, somebody will squeal, and to do analysis and tell us something, then who does?
To the extent that there's interest in it, yeah, I think that's right. And it's a double-edged sword for an organization that seeks to promote an individual. So, for example, you know, Alan, to your point that I'm only
You're nothing more than a creation of WAMC. No, my point is, for a fairly arrogant guy, that you owe me a great deal, which you'll never acknowledge because I have made you everything you are today. Yes.
I don't know. I think the whole analysis thing is a black hole for journalism.
Do you?
I do. I think the actual answer is to find better ways to monetize the electronic part of it, because despite this figure here from Gallup, a majority of Americans are still using traditional news institutions to get their information.
Oh, really?
Yes.
They're still using traditional news institutions.
Looks like there's
going to
be a fight here. I like it. I want to report to people on the outside. Both of these guys look quite determined right now. Paul, what did you mean?
I mean that between television and newspapers and their internet sites, that's where people go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But what's different, though, is that people don't recognize that they do. They're not buying a brand. They're going after information, or they're saying information will find me, to the extent that they're looking for it at all. And so you're right. So we can't monetize it as easily because people aren't saying, okay, I'm going to get the news. I'm going to go buy the Times Union, or I'm going to News Channel 13 or wherever they're doing. They are rather using search or social media, what their friends refer to.
Not everybody is.
Yeah, except for older folks.
But let me ask you about an analogy. Guy goes into a house of ill repute.
Oh, this is going to be good.
This topic always turns up. We're always talking about
sex. It's
always
from the same guy. Okay. He comes out of the house of ill repute. There's a pollster saying, what do you think about vice in Gotham City? And the guy says, terrible, terrible. He's just come out of the place.
Mm-hmm.
I would submit to you guys that the same thing is going on with news. They use it all right. People use it all right. But they still have the ability to say, we don't like what we have.
Right. That's true. And it's the same theory that applies to Congress. This same study found that the popularity of Congress, only 10% of people this year have confidence in Congress, and yet their incumbent members of Congress continually get reelected. And so
we like our guy.
Exactly. Yeah. We like our guy, and we like our newspaper. We like the TV station we watch, but the media, oh my goodness, they're terrible.
No, that's a terrific thing. And somebody should do a doctoral dissertation or a master's dissertation.
Okay, don't ask me. I already did mine. You read it.
But somebody should do a study which said, okay, what do you think of Congress? We hate it. What do you think of your guy? We love him. He's an exception to the rule. That's why we love him. And then you could draw certain conclusions from all of this about our proprietorial interest in our newspaper or in our congressperson, and then compare a crosstab on the newspaper and the congressperson.
Oh, this is why people don't like academia.
Uh-oh, I crossed over. I was interested in what he had to say.
Yeah, I was too. And frankly, guys, I was too, and I had a point when I started it. But then I got so immersed, I forgot it.
Yeah, well, this is, there we go, Professor. All right, if you're just joining us, you can join this conversation by writing to us, media@wamc.org. This is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio, which you can also write 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. Alan Shartok, Paul Conte, and Rex Smith here with you on the Media Project. How about that? By the way,
how about that? have these idioms you keep using, like, how about that?
Well, it just kind of fills the air, you know.
Or it's a terrific thing.
Isn't that great?
Isn't that great? I'm making a list of them. And if you send me $100 for WAMC, I will send you a list of Rex's idioms.
Okay. All right.
It's a good thing. See, there was one.
That's one way to monetize the newspaper.
Absolutely. We should do that. We in the media depend, I think we should say, to a greater extent than people realize on public relations practitioners, on people who tell us what's going on, who have been hired to do that.
They don't like it when we call them flacks.
Yeah, any more than we like it when we're called hacks, but that's who we are. We're hacks and flacks. So there you go.
Oh, I don't think so. You know, you could say somebody's a newspaper hack, but the general name for the guy who works for, you know, a company and has gone over to the, quote, dark side and makes twice what he made as a reporter, they're called flacks.
Okay. I think they'd rather be called flacks than dark side, actually, because it's like lobbyists, in the legislature.
Sure.
They depend heavily upon lobbyists who are experts in their field. to explain to members what's going on. It is interesting that citizens tend to view lobbyists entirely in a negative light, and we feed upon that in the media because we write it that way. But lobbyists really are an essential part of the dynamic of how legislation happens, in the same way that flacks are important to getting some information out there.
Okay, now, as a political scientist, I have to take a certain amount of offense to your analysis, because we all know that the guys come down from K Street and they all write in Washington and all write in some tax-saving provision for their company, to the point now where we're seeing a lot of major companies paying not one red cent in taxes while the people in the barrels go around and do that. So you could say they're an integral part of the process. Yes, but the process stinks.
But see, that's a limited viewpoint. That's this negative stereotyping by the media.
Did you just call me short?
No, but time is running short in the program.
It is a the fact of the matter is, though, that that's the kind of stereotyping that I'm talking about. We think of that as being what lobbyists do, but there really is a point at which people understand things because the people in the legislature understand things because the folks who represent industries tell them about it. And my point in the media is that there's a level of giving people information, and there's a level of going beyond it. Anyway, the whole point is simply that it's expensive, this business of hiring flacks to write press releases now.
Well, yes, but once again, the wealthier the client, the more likely it is that they will find themselves a public relations person to do that for them, which makes it even more of an unequal society, because politics, as you know, Rex,
is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources.
That's right, and newspaper space is involves resources. So, in other words, if somebody writes it up, gets it to you, calls you on the phone, and say, "Hey, Rex, remember me? Can I help you write this? Do the story? It's very interesting, and here are all the reasons it's interesting." Then they have more of a claim on those resources, meaning the space in the paper.
Increasingly, though, if you're hiring somebody to represent your point of view, they have to do not just calling up the reporter and saying, "Here's the thing." They have to really use all the media. They have to use social media.
Sure.
They have to have a sense of how to expand a story on the internet, how to use search engine marketing. It's really quite an extensive operation, I would
think. Right, right. And maybe we'll see a change in who becomes a flack. In other words, it may be that you have to be more like Paul Conte here, who is a brilliant man, and who, no, he is, and who understands all dimensions.
Write that down. I'm up for tenure in October.
Absolutely.
I'll write the letter.
Okay.
And, you know, who really does understand comprehensively. Where the old guy, with the guy with the fedora with the ticket in his, you know, brim, would be hired because he had contacts in the media. So you hire somebody who comes from it, and he has a way, or she has a way, to get into people's consciousness.
Actually, this goes back to that question about what we call the study of communications, because an increasing number of students in schools of communications are not intending to become journalists. They are there studying to become public relations practitioners.
Yes, that's right.
And that sort of thing.
It's the largest bulge in our program.
Is that
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And in mine, yeah. in the Legislative Gazette, I'll go around the room and say, "What do you want to do when you're done?" And several will say, "I want to go into PR."
And my recollection is that the number of public relations practitioners to journalists, the ratio is something like 7-1 now, that there are so many more public relations practitioners than journalists that more and more people chasing fewer and fewer
That's
outlets.
Right, Rex. And as you've often said, that's because if the tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, you know, it didn't happen.
It's not news.
Well, yeah, not news. And so, Rex, you're right once again. that's it, because it's become a central person. And quite often, the PR person becomes a decision maker, where in the old days, they weren't. So in other words, because it is so essential that you get the media and get your slice of the pie in the media, that person sitting around will say, "No, boss, we can't do it that way because it will be a non-starter for us."
It's been some time since I sat in a newsroom and got pitched on a story, but my recollection, even though I'm getting older, is that it was massive. The number of contacts that we would get on any given day or week for people pitching stories was huge. And that makes it more difficult to zero in on one particular practitioner's message. So a good practitioner.
Well, but some are more influential than others.
Well, and that's why they get paid more, too.
And some know the president of the company, but, and some know,
and
you
some
know.
Some have better techniques, too.
Right.
I mean, it's just getting like, I get a couple hundred emails every day, and
sure.
you just know, that stuff that doesn't go into the spam filter and gets caught. And so a lot of that is pitches, but the people who have a clever story or a person that is emerging can put a face onto a story, and that face kind of emerges into your awareness. That's a person who's, if you're hiring a PR person, that's worth doing. That's worth expenditure, I suppose.
Right, and those people are worth more money than the people who just hand out press releases about something that their organization did 2 weeks ago.
Nevertheless, all day long, we all sit at our computers or our telephones. The telephone will ring, and there is always an intern or somebody who was working for the PR professional
right.
who says, we're just updating our records.
Right,
are you
right.
still? You could spend your whole day talking to these people.
Right. I always say, no, you don't want to send anything to me. I don't, you don't want to bother. Yeah. But the fact is, of course, our job is to go far beyond that. And my point in saying that we rely upon those people is not to say that that's where journalism begins and ends. It is just to say that getting the information out, it sort of goes to that question of journalism of fact. Public relations folks can help you get the facts that you want to establish out into the world of journalism. And if there are things that we need to find out that are beyond what they want people to know, that's our job to dig that up.
Well,
that's
let me give you an example. I'm sorry for interrupting always. But let me give you an example. In Massachusetts, my state, a good state, there is a big Senate fight going on between a man named Gomez and a guy named Markey, Congressman Markey, and Gomez, an ex-SEAL. I swear to you guys, I get 200 messages a day from each side telling
really?
You why what the other guy said was wrong, why what this guy said was right. It's going to be a very close race.
Really?
Oh, yes. Very close race.
Hmm.
And even the Democratic candidate who was supposed to be ahead in blue state, Massachusetts, probably to help raise money, saying it's a very close race. We could lose this.
Hmm.
The implication is we could lose this. So that's
and does do any of those pitches help you in making decisions about?
Well, yes. And I'll tell you why. Because they give you factoids. In other words, you know, Gomez is always yelling that Markey has basically made deals in the inside Washington community. And I use that line, attributing it, in my column last week on the issue. So therefore, it gets through, I think, to some degree.
Hmm. The key is to see if you can avoid buying into a way that a political campaign characterizes your opponents, I think. That is, that it characterizes their opponents. If you can be sure that what you're portraying is accurate as opposed to being...
Well, that's all subjective. I mean, Rex, you have these editorial board meetings. They come in, they yell about what their opponents are doing and what they're doing. And to some degree, unless you have your ears completely blocked, you're hearing some of it and some of it saying, I think that may be right.
Yeah. Yeah, but the editorial boards are designed to be reflective of the positions of the editorial board members or of the... That's a little bit different from
that. I don't know that I understand that. Could you explain a little bit more?
Well, the point of an editorial board is to have a position. And so anything that is said to you bounces off what the position is of the members of the editorial board, whereas a reporter is intending to avoid having a point of view on a topic. An editorial board kind of is selected based upon a certain mindset that is reflective of whatever the publisher thinks that the organization ought to reflect.
Now, you and I have been over this territory many times, and you know I don't agree with you. It is true that an editorial board is going to come out with a position. But it is also true, and here comes the word you hate so much, that reporters, like everybody else, have a Weltanschauung. And that is forget about that, Jack. Weltanschauung. Mr. Wagner, do you spell your name with a W or a V? Okay, so...
What's this? Anyway, so they
the reporter has a position, and one way or another, they are not without foundation, an intellectual foundation, and how they organize their story and who they talk to and how it appears can never be completely neutral, and you know it and I know it.
Okay.
Paul, that okay sounded awfully condescending to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we will be back next week to carry on this conversation. Thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world.
publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheer.